It's only a matter of days, or a few weeks at the most, before we'll have some of that stifling hot Iowa weather. 100 degree temperatures, or even those around 90 or 95, are often spoken of as good corn weather, but at the same time, they're pretty hard on egg quality, unless adequate precaution is taken on the part of producers, processors, and distributors. There's a tremendous lot at stake in holding up the quality of eggs here in Iowa. Iowa is one of the top states in the nation from the standpoint of poultry and egg production and cash returns from that production. In 1948, the cash income for eggs sold in Iowa alone exceeded $132 million. That's more than just chicken feed in the pockets of Iowa farmers, or perhaps I should say, in the purses of Iowa farm homemakers, for usually it's mother who has responsibility for the chickens and eggs. Great as the return has been to Iowa poultry producers, it's certainly not as great as it might be. Quality makes a tremendous difference in the total income for Iowa egg producers, and quality is something we have not stressed as much as we might in the Hawkeye State. On doing some checking with the Market News Service in Des Moines, and with state and federal agricultural statisticians, I found that more than 3,978,000,000 eggs were sold in Iowa last year, and that the average price per dozen was right at 40 cents. From production and marketing people and the Bureau of Agricultural Economics, I learned that more than 45% of Iowa's eggs are sold ungraded, and that only about 30% are sold graded both to size and quality. Of this latter total, less than 70% of the eggs produced in Iowa grade out top quality. It seems to me these figures are conclusive proof that we ought to pay more attention to the care and handling and grading of eggs, especially during summer months. Now, to prove the point made earlier that Iowa egg returns could be greater if more attention were paid to quality, let me remind you that the premium paid for grade A eggs above current receipts ranges all the way from 2 to 10 cents a dozen. The way this figures out on the basis of statistics provided us, Iowans could boost their Iowa egg return by $10 million a year if more stress were placed on quality. The $10 million figure is on the basis of an average premium of about 4 cents a dozen more than what we're now getting for the eggs presently not being sold on the grade. The way we see it, 10 million eggs, or rather $10 million of increased returns for eggs, is a pretty nice little bonus, especially if it can be achieved just by handling the eggs better. Therefore, as today's farm highlight, we'd like to suggest to Iowa flock owners the recommendations made recently by S.E. Davis of Iowa State College. Mr. Davis reminds us that if we're going to keep the eastern market, we'd better pay more attention to the eggs produced here. Producers must remember that eggs start to deteriorate as soon as they're laid, and that the sooner they're gathered and then cooled to 50 degrees and kept cool until sold to the country buyer or delivered to the store or the consumer, the slower will be the rate of deterioration. Davis has these further suggestions for the producer. Provide an adequate number of clean nests. Produce only infertile market eggs. Gather 3 times a day in wire baskets. Cool eggs overnight in those wire baskets. Case the small ends of the eggs down in cool cases. Market only clean eggs 3 times a week, and do not wash eggs. In addition to the farmer or his wife or whoever handles the hens at a given place, others must also do their part. The country buyer, the processor, the shipper, the wholesaler, the storekeeper, yes, and the housewife too. Everyone is in on the chain to preserve egg quality, and all of us need to remember that when the pullet or the old hen lays the egg, it's not only fresh, but usually also of excellent quality. In other words, the hen does her part to assure top egg quality, but the question is, do we as producers, processors, handlers, and consumers do ours?
Wherever they live, on big farms, little farms, owned or rented, along the main highway or nestled along a side road, the rural homemakers of these United States and its territories are going to receive some well-deserved recognition this week. It's National Home Demonstration Week. a week when the attention of the nation is focused on the rural homemaker of today and her part in the great educational movement, National Home Demonstration Work. Today's home builds tomorrow's world is the theme for the week, and we can't think of a better one to symbolize the thoughtful attention rural homemakers are giving to bettering their homes and their communities through their home economics extension studies. Who are these rural homemakers? There are more than 3 million of them, some 80,000 right here in Iowa. They are women who have been and are taking part in homemaking studies made possible free of charge by their own state agricultural extension service and the United States Department of Agriculture. Here in Iowa, there is a homemakers organization in every county, and not a day goes by but what some group of rural homemakers get together, maybe 20 or 30 in someone's home, or perhaps 50 or more in a nearby town, and study the newest information available on better home and family living. What do they study? Well, let's take a typical cross-section of the lessons Iowa homemakers selected for their programs last year. Right now, they are busy planning for next year. Last year, they studied such topics as frozen food management, how to select such equipment as refrigerators, ranges, and home freezers, how to furnish their homes attractively and more conveniently. Every county last year studied something about planning appetizing, healthful meals. The women had lots of fun planning and preparing new kinds of salads, whipping up nourishing desserts, and learning about vegetable or meat cookery. There were lessons on time management, legal matters that every woman should know, family relationships, and how to beautify the home grounds. Many women got together on sewing bees to learn how to tailor garments or to select the right color and design on clothing for themselves. They studied bymanship of all types of garments, including children's clothes. And along with these homemaking topics, they studied school, health, and other community and national problems. Where do they get their information? In 70 Iowa counties, as in the majority of counties throughout the country, rural homemakers receive direct help and guidance from the county home economist. In other counties of the state, where there is no home economist, the women ask for and get help from the state home economics extension specialist from Iowa State College at Ames. And so as National Home Demonstration Week comes into the limelight, much well-deserved praise goes to every rural homemaker and her counterpart, the extension home economist. Here in Iowa, there won't be any extra fanfare as Iowa homemakers observe their special week, for in Iowa, the big thing from March through May are County Rural Women's Day meetings. These, says Louise Rosenfeld, Assistant Extension Director in charge of home economics extension work, are Iowa's way of paying tribute to the many homemakers who have been active in the family living program. It is a time, too, when these women who have given unselfishly of their time to lead 4-H clubs for the girls of their communities come in for their fair share of bouquets. Iowa's 4-H club girls now number more than 20,000. Without local leaders, without the help of the county extension home economist, and without the 4-H extension specialist at the college, this magnificent youth movement would not be possible. And so we salute the homemaker of Iowa, whether she lives in the country or in town, as she takes part in the study program on better homemaking. And we salute the county and the state extension home economist, who are the messengers for better homemaking everywhere. And we salute the home, today's home, which is building tomorrow's world.
Down through the ages, bread has been referred to as the staff of life, and we cannot think of bread without thinking of wheat, an ordinary farm crop and yet the golden blessing of mankind. Wheat and the history of mankind are inseparably linked. It is known that prehistoric races, such as the Swiss lake dwellers, cultivated that grain, and the Chinese claimed the use of wheat for food as early as 2,700 years before the Christian era. Now, more than ever before, the importance of wheat is being felt around the world. Since the war's end, the words save wheat, save meat, save the peace have become a household expression. To those aware of conditions in war-torn countries, it has become increasingly clear that wheat is one of the keys to peace. Hunger turns the rational human being into a supreme egotist who is concerned with little beyond self-preservation. In Vienna, there's a popular expression which illustrates just how important the staff of life is to man and to his ideals. Bread is free, freedom, and freedom is bread. This year, as last, the hearts of freedom-loving people were warmed when reports from our own wheat belt and elsewhere told of one of the greatest crops in history. In the United States, it poured from the fields in such tremendous amounts that grain terminals could not keep up with it. And each bushel that flowed from the great golden fields meant new life for starving peoples, insurance against slavery in famished countries, new hope for mankind. In recent years, our program of aid to Europe's hungry spelled the difference between freedom and social, economic, and moral chaos for her demolished countries. The bumper crop all over the world this year was reason for joy. The history of wheat is just about as colorful as the grain is important. Wheat, as we know it today, is not merely the result of chance growing, continued planting, and good weather. Our grain represents years of hard work and development, much sacrifice, and many disappointments. It's the latest chapter in a magnificent story of a battle against forces of nature which would have destroyed man's source of bread. A recent publication by Pillsbury Mills Incorporated tells of the fight against the enemies of wheat. They have been powerful foes, but always they have been overcome. You'll recognize these evils. Rust, sawflies, smut, hessian flies, and others all have come perilously close to robbing man of his staff of life. Each year, rust, the unseen red terror, swept in to sear thousands of acres of wheat into withering stalks of useless grain. Up to 30 harvests ago, there was no defense against this scourge. Then scientists from the Department of Agriculture and from America's agricultural colleges took up the challenge. First, they found that the barberry bush was host to the hordes of rust spores. A great campaign to destroy barberry bushes was begun. Though millions of the bushes were found and destroyed, the threat was not removed entirely. So the scientists went on with their work. They crossed and recrossed various strains of wheat until they found a breed which could withstand the red terror. Nature was working too, meanwhile. She had been breeding rust strains and finally produced one which threatened to undo the years of scientific research. But the plant scientists remained ready. They brought forth better wheat strains which resisted the new types of rust. Figures best describe the success of their battle. During the period from 1915 to 1928, the average annual loss from rust was 47 million bushels in the principal wheat states. From 1943 to 1945, the average annual loss was cut to 5 8/10 million bushels. The victory over rust is but one chapter in the long and continuing story of the struggle for better wheat. When the combine made its appearance on the American agricultural scene, crossbreeding again took place to produce stronger wheat stems which could support the ripened grain. Sawflies, the insect lumberjacks which cut into the stems to lay their eggs, hessian flies laying their eggs on the leaves and producing maggots that eat into the stems and rob the young wheat plant of its strength, each has been controlled through better wheat varieties and new planting practices. Smut, the enemy of wheat for more than 2,000 years, has been overcome by new chemicals and seed treatments. Leaf rust, which at one time robbed American farmers of 100 million bushels of wheat per year, was defeated through the breeding of rust-resistant grain. This, briefly, is a part of the story of the struggle for protection of wheat, the world's golden blessing. Nature will go on producing new enemies for our life grain, but man will respond to that threat with greater defenses and more resistant grains. It's an exciting story, this battle. It continues because of the realization that bread is freedom, and freedom is bread. It's the story of mankind's defense of the staff of life.